years ago, a wise professor of mine, my senior Robert Sokolowski, shared this principle with me. He said, with the rise of Protestantism and modernity, an integrated Catholicism blew up, it exploded, and its pieces have landed here and there in distorted form. And now as you look over the contemporary intellectual landscape, you can see these pieces. I often think of Sokolowski's principle when I survey the scene today, because you can see Catholicism everywhere, but often in odd, twisted, or distorted form. A very good example of the Sokolowski principle is Roland Emmerich's new film, 2012. The film is basically the telling of the apocalypse, story of the end of the world. We hear that the great sunspots have occurred, these explosions on the sun, and it's caused the overheating of the Earth's core, which in turn has led to all sorts of catastrophes, from volcanoes to earthquakes to tectonic shifts. In other words, the end of civilization as we know it. We hear that the kind of intellectual elite, a sort of cultural elite that knows about the coming catastrophe, have organized a sort of rescue operation. They built these great arks that will preserve a remnant of the human race, preserve much of the high culture of humanity, and even representatives of the animal kingdom. As the movie unfolds, we watch a kind of plucky family making their way as the world implodes around them to get onto these arks. The notion of a world-ending catastrophe is, of course, biblical. You can see it on display in the story of Noah's Ark. You can see it predicted in the book of the prophet Daniel. It's also on very vivid display in the book of Revelation, which brings the Bible to a close. I think there are two great sources for this religious idea of the end of the world. The first one is a keen awareness of the contingency of all things. The fact that things in the world exist, but they don't have to exist. They don't contain within themselves the reason for their own being. St. Augustine said they carry around the heritage of non-being. Things come into being, they pass out of being, they're contingent. So we know that the world is inherently fragile, and that's a deeply religious idea. The second source for it, I think, is a keen awareness of sin, how sin has invaded all the structures and institutions of humanity, from the family to culture to political institutions. And therefore, religious people have this sense of a need for a cleansing. The world should be cleansed of sin. Again, both ideas are tightly correlated to the idea of God. A radically contingent world exists, finally, only because of the non-contingent God who sustains it. And, of course, the world is seen as sinful only against the backdrop of God, only in reference to some objective criterion of good, which is God. So they're both intensely religious, God-centered ideas. Now, what you see in Roland Emmerich's movie, in accord with Sokolowski's principle, is this biblical story, but now twisted, contorted, precisely because God has been eliminated from it. And God isn't just absent, he's been aggressively eliminated. I'll give you some examples. As the world implodes, the world is ending, civilization's collapsing. Lots of people in the movie pray, but anyone who prays is eliminated. No one who prays survives. In fact, the scientist who discovered the catastrophe, who first learned about this heating of the Earth's core, is a Hindu man. We see him, as the great tidal wave approaches, praying. He and his family are obliterated. They're wiped out. The American president, played by Danny Glover, stays behind as the government flies off to get on the arcs. He stays behind. We see him in the chapel at the White House. Then he comes on national television to inform the people about this terrible situation. And then he basically says, all we can do is pray. And he begins to lead them in Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But at that point, all communication severed. He's just cut off. The cardinals of the Catholic Church we see gathered in prayer in the Sistine Chapel. As the great earthquake comes, they look up. And the Sistine ceiling begins to collapse. But we see a fissure, this crack, running along. And it runs right between the fingers that connect God and Adam, as though humanity and divinity have just been severed. And then the whole thing falls down on the cardinals. They're all destroyed. Meanwhile, out in the piazza of St. Peter's, thousands have gathered to pray. The Pope is there on the loggia. And a scene I think will go down in the annals of cinematic anti-Catholicism, as the Pope prays, the great dome of St. Peter's totters over, and then it collapses and then rolls on all the people, crushing the thousands who are praying. And now, just in case you missed the point, Roland Emmerich shows us the great statue of Jesus that hovers over Rio de Janeiro. And we see its arms falling off and the whole statue collapses. The point seems pretty clear that prayer is just useless. In the meantime, we see all the people coming out to get on the arks. These are the ones who will survive. No reference is made to God among them. Nobody prays. No one thinks about it theologically. No one puts it in that sacred perspective. There's a lot of talk about compassion, about science, about preserving the culture. No reference to God. There is one religion that makes the cut, and that's Buddhism. There's a Buddhist monk who brings a few members of his family, and he survives. But his grandmother, who comes on with him, refers to everyone on the boat as all children of the earth, not children of God. And of course, Buddhism is a non-theist religion. It's a religion that doesn't really believe in God in the sense of a creator. That seems to be the one religion that makes the cut for Roland Emmerich. As the movie comes to a close, the arcs are making their way. Now the catastrophe is kind of past, and the arcs are making their way through the placid seas. And coming on the screen is the phrase, year one. We're starting over. Well, of course, that's a fantasy that goes back at least to the French Revolution. Once we've eliminated God and eliminated religion, we can cut all this reference to Jesus, so dating our calendar because of Jesus. Now it's year one. We're starting afresh. We hear, too, as the movie ends, that the one continent which has survived, all the other ones have shifted or they've gone underwater, they've been overwhelmed. The one that survived, that actually rose during the crisis, is Africa, and they're heading toward Africa. Now, say what you want about that. I don't know really what he had in mind in making that point, but what struck me was the perhaps unintentional irony. Africa is the continent today where Christianity, especially Catholic Christianity, is exploding. There's this explosion of interest in Christianity, precisely in Africa. And so it struck me as funny that as all these kind of skeptics arrive on the shores of Africa, they're not going to be met by Euro-skeptics. They're going to be met by millions upon millions of Christians. Now, if you think I'm just making all this up or projecting all this anti-religious stuff, take a look at Roland Emmerich's biography sometime. I'll give you one little tidbit. In his house, he has a life-size statue of Pope John Paul II, who's reading his own obituary and laughing. Emmerich is a pretty anti-religious soul, and I think it comes through pretty clearly in the movie. So I would say, in summary, don't go see this movie. If you're interested in the apocalypse, read the book of Revelation. It's, of course, much more theologically compelling and much less boring.